Welcome to Leadership Edelics Season 2 Part 2. I'm Sebastian Fouillade. Join me every week to explore the intersection between deep spiritual experiences and leadership. Leadership in the sense of how do you manifest a better future for yourself, for your family, for your community, and for others. So join me every week as I interview guests who've had those hardships, those journeys, those hero's journeys, and they share the insights that they've gained along the way. Insights meant to inspire us, meant to awaken us, meant to help us build a better future. Today, we have a very special episode for the holidays. I'm meeting with a dear friend of mine, Hernan Sevastano. Hernan is the father of Reina and husband of Angela. He's a talented plant medicine musician, facilitator, and space holder. Hernan left the corporate world a few years ago after 18 years at Microsoft and Zillow working in user research. He now runs a wellness and retreat center with his wife outside of Seattle in the mountains of Leavenworth. Hernan recounts his journey from childhood to fatherhood, his work to heal, the missteps and the lessons he learned along the way, the role of plant medicine in his healing, and all the forms of medicine in his life, from music to their wonderful daughter, Reina. This is a powerful episode full of vulnerability and deep emotion. And we cover so much ground, from spiritual bypassing to healing generational trauma, to holding emotional space for your children. We recorded this in person, so we've got a great video on YouTube, and I recommend you watch it if you can. This is our gift to you for the holidays. This is the last episode of 2022 and of season 2. So I'll see you in 2023 for season 3. Well, Hernan, welcome. Yeah. Welcome to the show. Welcome to our space here. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks so much for inviting me. And I'm honored to share a little bit about my journey, you know, and on the medicine path and just my experience, you know. It's just my experience speaking from, last 10 years or so of medicine work.
Beautiful. Yeah, I have to say you've been an inspiration in my own journey, because we both come from the corporate world.
Yeah.
And so just seeing you, you know, going through that journey and for me has been very inspiring. So having you on the show is really nice.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, as we prepared for the show, you shared even more about your story. And I was like, oh, we got to talk about that. We got to talk about where you came from.
Yeah.
And how much of a journey it's been.
Yeah. Because that corporate identity didn't come from nowhere, you know. It was part of how I grew up, I guess. My father was a corporate guy, and you know, we'll talk more about him. And, I feel like a lot of my journey has been about shedding, an older identity that no longer felt aligned with what I felt called to really do with the rest of my life, you know, now at the age of 50 or so, 50 something. I feel like the medicine really turned me on to the second half of my life, and in a really beautiful way, and helped me shed a lot of belief systems that had been programmed into me by my the culture where I grew up, and by my father, corporate executive, and a certain definition of success, I guess, you know, and what it means to succeed in life, you know, and I don't want to downplay it or dismiss it, because it also, my corporate history gave me the opportunities, you know, and the resources that I have today to do what I really feel like is in my heart's calling, you know. And so I'm both grateful for my father. I also have certain, resentments, I guess. I will talk more about that. But I am grateful for some of the things that he taught me, you know, and discipline and things like that, that allowed me to yeah, I guess have some amount of success in the corporate world, but then ultimately encountering other medicines in my life that helped me realize that there was another side to my life. Yeah. There's more to life than what I had experienced up to that point. You know.
Yeah. When actually, before we dive in all this,
yeah.
Let's talk about what you're up to right now. Like, what are some of the projects you're doing? And you're multi-talented, and let's start there, and then you can start at the beginning after that.
Sounds great. I'm Hernán Sabastano, first and foremost, I'm a father and a husband to my daughter Reina, my wife Angela. Our daughter just has been the most profound medicine, and in a way, the kind of the apex of my healing journey so far, the climax of it, I guess. And it's an ongoing process for sure. We have a nature retreat center near Leavenworth in the mountains there, right on the Wenatchee River. It's just a beautiful setting. And we host all types of healing and wellness retreats, a lot of yoga, meditation,
breath work.
Ceremonies, you know. Which is
you're so a talented musician.
I one of the greatest gifts the medicine gave me was reconnecting me to my creative spirit through the guitar. And she encouraged me to learn to sing in my native tongue, Spanish, which I had never done before the medicine. I was in a pop band, American pop band before the medicine, and played at local venues here, but I never even thought to sing in my native tongue. And the medicine kind of showed me, just really encouraged me to reconnect with that. And
your native tongue being
Spanish. Yeah. Argentinian Spanish, but yes. That was one of the biggest gifts that the medicine gave me early on. And one of the first gifts that the medicine gave me, just learning to sing and play. And I learned through her, really, I didn't take a lot of lessons, I just kind of felt into it, it really helped me heal a lot of the childhood trauma. And that's why she connected me with my native tongue and brought me back to my childhood and helped me process a lot of the discord, growing up that I had in my family and with my father in particular.
Yeah.
And we offer our retreat center for healing opportunities, and I play music and I hold space, facilitate some of this work.
Yeah. And I like when we talked earlier, you talked about the different types of medicines in your life. There's your daughter, your music, you've got some other ones you talked about. And it's nice that it's not only a substance necessarily when you talk about medicine.
Absolutely. No, medicines come in all forms and shapes and sizes. And, I think a lot of the visionary medicines that really help you work on your emotional and spiritual growth, I guess, are in plants and fungi. But ultimately, I think the real medicines are within, and they are around us all the time, also in the form of our family, and our friends, our community. And I think the plants just reconnect us, help open us up to the medicines that were around us all along. And we just maybe were too closed off to really pay attention to them and really let that love, you know, I call it the family of love, you know, into our lives, into our spirit, you know.
It's beautiful. And I can see too, when we don't have that, how we try to fill that hole. Mm-hmm. With food or
substances, you know. So substances, you know, it's like, that's why I focus less on substances, you know, now, and you know, more in the development of the medicines that I can develop a healthy relationship with, you know. Yeah. And substances can be tricky, you know. They can lead to addiction, obviously, yeah, and a lot, whole lot of spiritual bypassing, a whole yeah lot of bypassing in general about, you know, the real wounds that we need to heal, mm-hmm, like doing the hard work to heal, doing the shadow work, you know. Yeah. And sometimes substances can be used to numb things, yeah, numb the pains, you know, yeah, numb the hurt, you know. Yeah. And I've been guilty of that, yeah, you know. Yeah.
And they can be very insidious too. Like it's not always clear how they impact you. Some of them might have very subtle
yeah
effects that I found that fascinating, and you really need to be sensitive to it to really realize, oh, wow, this is actually impacting
yeah
how I think about the world. I'm yeah not, like, for me is sometimes if I work with cannabis, it will do that to me. Mm-hmm. This is like, you know, some remaining effects yeah the last day that I need to be very well aware of yeah, like, oh, this isn't necessarily my baseline thinking right now. Yeah. There's a little bit of a mm-hmm little twist mm-hmm to it.
Cannabis is an interesting one. It's a tricky plant spirit for sure, yeah, you know. And it's, and for me, like, I've developed a really good relationship with cannabis after not having one when I was younger. I was smoking to get high and stuff, yeah, but now I use cannabis very constructively, yeah, you know, in a very intentional way during my morning practice, you know, my little meditation time that I set aside for myself in the morning. And it can, you know, again, with the right intention, any substance can be a medicine.
Yeah.
And with the wrong intention, it can be a drug. Yeah. You know, it's yeah can be something that you use to forget or to numb rather than to yeah to wake up, you know, to the healing that's necessary in your life.
Yeah.
And yeah, some substances can just lead you down a dark path, you know, if you don't have a good relationship with them, like I did with alcohol. You know, that was something that I used to mm-hmm numb the pain of, a lot of trauma around my father. And it's insidious, like you said, because it just kind of, you're numbing yourself so you don't really feel what's really happening to you, you know?
Yeah.
By definition. And so it can creep up on you, and before you know it, you're an addict, you know, and you're destroying your life. And that, you know, that definitely, hopefully we have the medicines and the support in our life from our friends and family who are willing to have those hard conversations with us and who, you know, kind of wake us up saying, okay, you need to, this isn't healthy, you know, you're kind of messing things up here,
yeah,
you know. And I had that in some close friends and family. That,
oh, that's good. Yeah. 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 No, that takes a lot to break some of those patterns and,
yeah,
you know, and they don't always have to be like also destructive patterns. I mean, there's some patterns that are, you know, just snacking before going to bed, like things that
oh, yeah
will impact you. because of the connection between
the Thanos and getting the munchies.
Well, yeah, you picked up on what I was talking about. Yeah. let's talk about your music. You actually gave me so many things as I was listening to you that I was like, oh man, there's just so much to who you are today, mm-hmm. that is the result of your hard work and your journey. And it's hard when I listen to you to not want to dive in any of those parts.
I got time. We can talk for a while. I'm having a good time. So.
Music is of particular interest for me because I share a lot of that experience, reconnecting with music through plant medicine. Mm-hmm. In fact, when you talk about singing in your native tongue, my native tongue is French, so yes. I haven't heard any French medicine songs yet.
There's plenty of them out there,
but there's plenty of French songs about love. And I did sing once in a ceremony. I was like, well, you know, Hernan reconnected with his native tongue, and I started to sing in ceremony. And there's a very specific reason why I had distanced myself from my native tongue and mm-hmm. I wasn't singing that anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really curious how that journey went for you, and you know, how was it like reconnecting with your native tongue through music, and how did it happen, and then what did you learn in that process?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the way it started, I think, was first year or so that I was sitting with our first teachers, Northern Native American couple who just have a lot of gratitude for, first people I sat with and the first circle I was a part of. One of the assistants, one of the facilitators in that circle, turned me on to a song by Alonso del Rio. And it's called Camino de Estrellas. It's the Path of the Stars. And I think the first version I heard was Shimshai's version of the song. Alonso del Rio is a medicine carrier in Peru, and amazing songwriter in it. But I heard Shimshai's version first, and it really, that song just spoke to me. And it turns out it's probably because, it's about connecting, again, the path of the stars, connecting with your ancestors, And for me, the paternal lineage and the trauma that had been passed down to my father and then to me. And just kind of reconnecting with that and learning to find compassion for both love and compassion for my father, and after, becoming estranged from him, he chose another path in life. And so this song really spoke to me, this guy, who shared the song with me, encouraged me to just pick up the guitar and just learn. I knew how to play guitar, but I hadn't sung in Spanish before. And so when I sang that song, it just felt like that. It just felt like, it's hard to explain. It's just like connecting with a really deep part of my soul and a really deep part of my trauma, I guess, and singing it, just the act of singing the song and in Spanish. I'm like, I had never heard myself sing in Spanish before. How is this possible? And it just like felt like, it's just like, it's hard to explain. It's just as a feeling of expansion and liberation and freedom, from a lot of a lot of pain, and so I just started learning a lot of songs. There's Shimshai songs, his album with Susanna La Ventana was really inspirational to me, and I just kind of you know, I couldn't play as well as Shimshai. And so I just kind of, and I'm kind of a minimalist in my music anyway. Miles Davis once said that music is the space between the notes. And then that is, for me, that so resonates, you know, so deeply. And always did, you know. And so also my lack of technical skill just necessitated that I just play very simple, minimal songs, melodies, just very simple finger picking, a lot of space so that I could think about what I had to play next. No, but really it's just because I do believe it's the space that songs are spirits and they need to breathe. Notes need to breathe, you know? And so the pauses are really important to me. It allows the note to breathe and it creates a space for the next note. Yeah. And it just creates a mood, you know, and a feeling, which is what I'm after for, you know, just a certain emotional connection for myself primarily, but then hopefully that comes across to those that I'm sharing a song with, you know.
How's that journey been for you as you've evolved and, you know, was that the first plant medicine songs you were playing? Because before you were in a band.
Yeah.
But it wasn't medicine songs.
No, it just pops up. Really, we can talk about the definition of medicine song, too. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, music is medicine, period.
Music is medicine.
So, like, someone once asked me, what is medicine music? What are you talking about? I'm like, that's a good question. I don't really know. Music is about love. You know, I think primarily, you know, in one form or another. And I guess medicine songs focus on connecting us to the natural world and the elements. And it's just, those are the themes and the topics that are covered. But really, medicine music is medicine. And it's anything that just connects you with your emotional space, you know. Yeah. And like, that's why, you know, if you find a French song that speaks to you, you know, and then that's a medicine song.
I found a few that involve an accordion sometimes, and I was like, oh man, I don't see myself learning accordion and bringing that to the medicine circle. That might be a little much, but I'm sticking to harmonica right now, which is pretty close to
accordion. I mean, the ceremony space obviously requires a certain amount of subtlety and kind of softness, just because of the nature of the container and the stillness that we're trying to achieve in that container. And so, you know, I don't know how subtly an accordion can be played, but, you know, I mean, people bring harmonicas and all kinds of interest gongs, you know, all kinds of interesting instruments into. I'm not a purist, you know. I mean, there's certain instruments that I resonate with that literally resonate with my being, you know, and the guitar is primarily that for me. But I've heard all sorts of beautiful music, you know.
Have you created your own music from working with plant medicine? I thought you did.
Oh yeah.
That you had a story around that you went out after ceremony and a song came to you.
Yeah. So first I learned medicine songs that Shimshai and Alonso and other people, you know. And then I started receiving songs, you know, from the medicine directly, you know, my own songs. And so it's kind of it was part of that evolution. And that came fairly early on in the second or third year. I started just sitting, you know, with the medicine, and all of a sudden these just songs would come through, you know, just get line by line, you know, just kind of free association kind of lyrics, I guess, or themes, lyrical themes. My favorite songs of mine are ones that just came naturally through the medicine. And then, you know, you go home and you refine them and you add certain melodies and certain touches, you know. But, it's, again, that's been such a huge part of my healing journey is music. And the songs that I've received and that I've from the medicine that were gifted to me by the medicine, you know. Yeah. I guess I wrote them, you know, but it's really, I consider them gifts from spirit, you know. Yeah. And you know, gifts for my healing process, you know. And that's primarily the function that they've served for me, you know. Yeah. It's been a huge gift. And if I can, and I also get the message that, you know, that these gifts are meant to be shared. All of our gifts are meant to be shared. And I think that's part of what the medicine teaches us too. The medicine works through us, not just on us.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think one of the most beautiful things the medicines do is open us up to our own gifts so that we may share them with the world. And then that healing can kind of spread virally that way, you know.
Yeah.
I feel that's how the medicine works, working through us. And, you know, and then, you know, we all become medicine to each other in some ways, you know. We're sharing our gifts with each other, and we all kind of learn and benefit from each other's kind of healing process and the gifts that were uncovered through that process.
Yeah. How's that music evolved through the years as a tool from healing for you to a tool for healing others? Like, how are you using it now versus how you were using it when you were first working with it?
I don't know. I think it's just kind of in a gradual evolution and developing confidence in my gut, I guess. And really tuning into what feels good to me, you know, what feels like emotionally both challenging and nourishing at the same time. And it's just over time you learn to tune into like how much space you want between the notes and, you know, what kinds of songs and how you build them up, you know, and how you break them down and the mood that you want to convey and get across. And I really, you know, it's just developing confidence in yourself and in your intuition and just it's a developing your relationship with the medicine who helps you tune into to that, you know. And you know, I share these. At first, I was really nervous to share songs. You know, I'm like, who am I to be sharing a song?
Yeah, I've enjoyed all your songs.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But, you know, it's just developing that confidence in your voice. You know, it's finding your voice, really, what it's about. You know, and that's whether it's in your native tongue or whatever tongue, you know, it's just finding your voice. And again, finding a way to share what's in your heart with others, you know, and what's coming through for you emotionally. And if it's a genuine part of your process, there's a good chance that others might resonate with that and might benefit from it in some way, you know. And you know, there's nights where, and I've learned this the hard way, where it's like there's a time to share in with the medicine and there's a time to receive. And learning when to play is a huge part of the journey, you know, and when not to play is an even more important part of the journey. Because sometimes the medicine is, you know, in subtle and not so subtle ways, telling you to just sit down and just receive and just chill out and just really like work on your process. It's not time to share right now. It's time to do your own work and go inward and don't let your ego fool you into or distract you from that work.
Yeah.
You know, by I want to play a song. I want to share a song because it's, you know, the ego's there, you know. Yeah. And it's about learning to identify what's coming from the ego and what's coming from the heart and what's listening to the medicine. Like, it's a process of learning to listen to the medicine. And like Alex always said, you know, standing behind the medicine, you know, don't get in your head and think, oh, I want to play a song. It's like, you're always in support of the medicine and and standing behind her, not getting in front, not getting in the way, not getting in front of her, you know, what she's trying to do in that container at that time. And I still make mistakes from time to time, you know, after 10 years, I'm still, sometimes I get caught up in my head. It's usually when I haven't drank enough medicine, you know, when you get all up in your head and the ego starts to control things there, you know, and you get distracted from the real work of listening to what's going on inside of you and listening to, as a space holder in particular, listening to what the medicine is asking for in that space at that exact moment. And sometimes it's like, you know, someone will ask me to play and I've learned to say, no, right now is not the right time for me, you know. It's like, but yeah, it's a learning process. Good. It's a learning process.
That's beautiful. I look forward to listening to some of your songs again, because it's been a few years.
I'm recording some songs. I'm really excited to finally be recording some songs. I've done a few recordings here and there, but nothing serious. And, you know, the birth of our daughter, Regina, really inspired a lot of creative energy and a lot of new songs. And I'm finally feeling really called to document this, the first 2 years of her life, this new phase of our lives, you know, with some of these songs, to leave as a legacy for her, you know, just to, so she has a sense of like the, my journey into fatherhood, you know.
Yeah, that's a beautiful gift. I can relate. Appreciate that. And, I mean, it's so special.
Yeah.
Daughter and being able to play to her and give her that safe space that maybe you never had.
Yeah, I didn't grow up.
you're making me all cheery now, because I do that to my daughter. I will play to her, and you know, I didn't have that when I grew up.
I didn't either. My parents were not musical. I grew up around sports. I wanted to be a soccer player. Yeah. You know, like a lot of Argentinian boys growing up. You know, like I just wanted to win the World Cup, you know, and that, you know, and tennis too. And so I had no interest in music for most of my youth, until around high school or so, where I heard Prince. And then I was like, wow, that's fantastic. That really just, that music just really spoke to me. And that was my first, introduction to music. And ironically, you know, it was my father who gave me my first guitar. Before I even really knew that I wanted to play guitar, I kind of dabbled in it a little bit. This was when I was late teens or so. I'd mentioned, you know, Prince's music, and he's like, you didn't understand that, but like, he's like, all right, well, whatever, I'll just give you a guitar. And one of the beautiful, I guess, serendipities or whatever, circularities, is that I used that guitar much later on. I kind of stuffed it. I played with it a little bit, you know, and then, like I said, I played in a band for a little bit, but then I just stuffed it away in a closet. And many years later, the medicine said, go grab that guitar that your father gave you, you know, and learn to sing in your native tongue. And so I used that guitar to heal the wounds of my father's rejection. So he gave me the, you know, when my father chose a different life, you know, and we're estranged, and that's been my core wound, you know, that I've been trying to heal my whole life, really, you know. And the beautiful irony is that he gave me the guitar way before we came estranged, that I would eventually use to really initiate that healing process with the encouragement of the medicine, you know.
Are you still using that guitar?
No, I got a better guitar. Okay. It was he gave me a beginner's guitar. Like,
and now I'm using this guitar to play it to my daughter, and I was waiting for
it. I do play it occasionally. It's for, nostalgic reasons. Yeah. And it's got a decent sound. I love it, but,
Yeah, wow. It's such a beautiful journey, and you have such a beautiful soul. Thank you. And another thing I really appreciated when we met, it was after a ceremony, you cooked for everyone. Like, it was like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. You were making omelet, the most wonderful omelet for everyone. And I was like...
Was that back at Sahali?
No, it was later on. But I was like, wow, it's so nice to see someone who gives so much. And, you're giving your music to... others, to your daughter, and food, and have you always been like that, or is it
that's an interesting question. I think because, and if you want to trace this back to childhood trauma, I think it's like, because there was so much discord in my family growing up. And my parents divorced when I was 3, and there's just a lot of fighting, and I think I just wanted to please people, I just wanted to belong, because there was attachment trauma there, and so I think that, that kind of... For me, was a way of coping with that trauma, to just want to help, just want to nourish my parents, I've always loved feeding people, just nourishing people.
Oh, you were enjoying it.
I love it.
That's what I could see. I was like, wow, this is clearly something I wouldn't want to do right now. But you're deriving energy from it.
Yeah, I do, and I love cooking. First of all, I find it meditative and fun and creative, and and I love good food. So, I know what I like, I guess. That's also something that I've had to work on, is just giving too much of myself and too much of my energy. And yes, I derive energy from nourishing people through food and music and stuff, and just socially. I get a lot of energy. I'm an extrovert in a lot of ways, although I grew up as an introvert. But I derive a lot of energy from connection, social connection, and wanting to make people happy, wanting to please people, but at the same time, you have to nourish yourself, and if you're always giving to others, you leave a little reserve for yourselves. And so that's been a big part of my process, and hopefully growth. It's just learning to kind of care for oneself as well, so that you can be of service and nourish others. But you got to nourish yourself first, and that's it's not just around food or music, but just holding space and family life and everything. And I love cooking for my family, and I get a lot from that. But sometimes I'm tired and we just get takeout, and that's great too.
That's good. I'm still learning. That was actually one of the big learnings, transitioning from corporate, where it was very easy for me to set boundaries because I didn't necessarily enjoy what I was doing there all the time, to what I'm doing now, which I love. but it's like I can't give all the time. So yeah. I have to be like, okay, I'm going to add some space, just like you were talking about space in the notes, space in music, you need space in the life so that it can breathe.
Yeah.
And so going through that last, it's been eight, 9 months has been a good lesson.
Yeah.
Talking about corporate.
Yeah.
We share that in common where we transition from corporate to a more of a spiritual journey. How did you end up in corporate in the first place?
It's kind of an involved story, but there's kind of a couple ways to answer that. I think my father was a corporate guy, corporate executive. And I think that at some level, I kind of inherited that model of success in life, you know? And it's like, this is what you do. This is what you go to college and you get a degree and then you join a big company and you climb the ladder and you make a bunch of money and then you'll be happy. And it's like,
so how did it come to a head?
My father, you know, that was his identity. But like I said, my parents divorced when I was young, and my stepfather was a psychologist, you know, when I was 10, actually, my mom and stepdad made the difficult decision to move us from Argentina to the United States. And because of the political situation in Argentina, it was really unstable. You know, there's a military kind of a dictatorship there, and it just wasn't safe. We sought a political asylum, you know, in the States. And we moved to the Bay Area when I was 10. And I really, in a lot of ways, my stepfather was, was a really strong father figure to me as well. And he had a more kind of humanistic approach to perspective on life. And you know, we talked about psychology, and he was a psychoanalyst. And I think I was really, at some level, my heart was seeking answers as to why people do the things they do and they make the choices they make to love each other or to split up. What's that?
You were 10?
I was 10 when we moved to the States.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then, just growing up with my stepfather as a psychologist, that's what, I didn't go for the corporate, world right away. I wanted to become a psychologist thanks to the, influence from my stepfather but mostly the curiosity around why people do the things they do, and why they fight, why they split up and divorce that was my psychology was my major when I went to university. And I was fascinated. I was a behavioral psychology. I actually did research with pigeons and rats and behavioral conditioning research and trying to understand the principles of behavior and why people do the things they do. And, but that, the academic route is difficult, and there just wasn't, I didn't see a path really. And so all this,
So as you were going through this search for answers, were you aware where this need for answer was coming from?
No.
Or it's not.
I'm retrospectively reframing.
Because I'm like...
I wasn't using these this language as a teenager.
Okay.
No, but I'm just saying I'm kind of feeling into what maybe what drew me to psychology.
Yeah,
it's just,
yeah.
I was just perplexed by human nature, because of the discord in my family and my stepfather helped tune me into that a little bit. But again, the academic path was challenging. And so Microsoft called one day and said, hey, I was a behavioral researcher. And so Microsoft one day called and said, hey, do you want to come work for us and do research? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know anything about software. I know pigeons and rats and that's it, I know how to, design research protocols and ask questions and get answers. And that's why they hired me. And then I learned everything else, everything about like user experience, what used to be called usability engineering, and designing software interfaces and stuff like that. And,
when was that?
That was in 2000. I started at Microsoft. Yeah. About 22 years ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So I probably know some of the people you worked with because I love working with the user experience, the user research teams.
There. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like you're designing software to be more intuitive, to be more compassionate to people's needs and abilities, And so, it's related to, again, understanding human nature, So I was in the corporate world for... I was at Microsoft for 6 years and then at Zillow for 12 years. So almost, 18, 19 years in the corporate world. And I have a lot of gratitude for my experiences in the corporate world.
Yeah.
And the people that, that I encountered along the way, my bosses and coworkers. I learned a ton from them. I learned not just about software design or user experience, but just about professional conduct and, managing my time and like all kinds of things that the corporate structure can help, good practices and good habits and stuff like that. But about 10 years ago, I just started feeling like it wasn't the right place for me anymore. It felt like it wasn't nourishing me. I had learned what I needed to learn and receive what I needed to receive. And my heart felt called to another path, That path really started about 10 years ago when I first sat with the grandmother ayahuasca. And it was kind of initiated by a few, mushroom experiences before that and kind of recreationally and, helped me open up my experience, my consciousness to the idea that there's more to life than what I was feeling up to that point. There's just there are other dimensions to explore and in my being, in my life. And those first couple experiences about 10 years ago with the grandmother were really eye-opening, heart-opening, mind-opening experiences that really showed me the work that I had to do for the rest of my life, the trauma that needed healing,
How do you go from there when you're deep in corporate world and you're doing fairly well? I think it happens to a lot of people, especially now that, more people are experiencing the medicine and a lot of people are presented with those powerful messages.
Yeah.
How did you manage that?
Yeah. It was a long process.
Yeah.
You know, it's a long journey. And a difficult one, you know, and it took time. It took, you know, I first sat 10 years ago, like I said, and, but I didn't leave the corporate world until about 5 years ago,
yeah.
2017, I think, you know. So yeah, it took, 5 or 6 years yeah. to really, to actually step away, you know, but it with a lot of turmoil yeah. in that time during those first 5 years of like realizing that I needed to change paths in my life, you know, and I needed to follow another calling. And there was just a lot of agonizing around shedding the corporate identity, I guess, which yeah. I think had been ingrained in me by my biological father,
yeah.
who I was estranged from at the time, yeah. you know. And so I feel the medicine was calling me to heal those wounds ultimately, yeah. you know, and ultimately so that I could become a father myself.
Mm.
And just heal that generational
wow
trauma, you know.
So I can that, see that. So yeah. you don't pass it on.
So you don't pass it on, you know. And I think that's all that I can hope to do is just, yeah, just try to be the best father that I can and be there, you know, yeah. be present with my daughter and be able to hold emotional space for her,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a way that maybe my father couldn't for me in certain ways. And not, I don't mean to speak badly about my father. Yeah. He had a lot of beautiful qualities and he was a loving human and a loving father in a lot of ways, but there were certain ways that he couldn't support us. And, you know, a lot of, yeah, there's just not a lot of modeling around kind of emotional intelligence, you know?
Mm,
and
yeah.
as is, I don't know, I don't want to say typical, but like, I think a lot of men struggle of that generation, and especially in yeah. South America, struggle with connecting with their emotional beings, you know,
yeah,
emotional energies. And
I can see that.
And
I mean,
yeah,
I can relate to
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I have similar experience. Some of it, I think it's the generation as yeah. well, the culture yeah. of the time.
So, yeah, I forget where I was, but, you know.
yeah, we were in corporate and,
yeah.
and your daughter and...
I felt the need to follow a path of healing yeah. that separation and that rejection from my father. And in the corporate world, I didn't have the space to really do that. I didn't really have the awareness really that I even needed to heal that. And it wasn't until ayahuasca awakened me to that, you know, that I started following that. And again, slowly over the course yeah. of 5 years, I started, okay, maybe this is not the right place for me. Maybe I need to focus on, just my own healing and my own developments and, more than anything, Sebastian, it was just like, I wasn't happy, you know,
yeah.
I just wasn't happy. Again, I'm kind of retrospectively reframing, you know, articulating what at the time just felt like, I'm just not in the right place. I don't feel happy. I don't yeah. feel nourished, you know? And so I was just trying to like, breathe, yeah. you know, I was just trying to breathe.
get some space.
And you know, corporate life is stressful, and it's demanding, and it just doesn't leave a lot of space for other aspects of your development. And so just following the medicine, you know, and gradually, you know, with a lot of missteps along the way, you know, eventually I was able to leave 5 years ago and start this wellness retreat center, you know, which is just felt like the path for me, you know, it felt called to, I guess, transmute some of that corporate identity and energy and resources into just giving back in a way, you know, and healing and wellness and a different model for what it means to be happy, you know, and what it means to really be, to have your soul nourished, you know, and
Before we get to that transition, because I'm sure it's also interesting once you left corporate, what are some of the tips you could give people or advice you give people that are going through something similar? Because I went through something similar, and there's a lot of people going through kind of that, you know, I don't know, it's not a necessarily a midlife crisis, or maybe it is.
No, it absolutely was for me. Yeah, it's a midlife crisis.
It's like you're going through that. You've had those strong messages, and you don't know how to approach it. You might want to go too fast. You might think it's going to take forever. Like, what helped you the most? Those are multiple questions.
It's good. I like the question. It's a lot of people in the medicine community along the way, just planting seeds, you know, and sharing their medicines with me in different ways. But the main advice that I have from personal experience is, you know, and this, you know, it's talked about a lot now, for good reason, is the importance of actually doing your work, you know, and not spiritually bypassing it by continually going to ceremony after ceremony. And I think this is a pitfall for a lot of corporate types who have resources, you know, financially, to just throw money at it, you know, and just keep going to ceremony as kind of an escape from the real work that needs to be done. And so the biggest advice is if the medicine gives you homework, do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely do it. And don't wait. You know, I'm not saying like make a big life decision after your first ceremony. You know, I'm going to quit my job. It's like, it's a process, but just tune in to the medicine and do, if the medicine says go, you know, reach out to your father, try to heal that relationship in some way, even if it's not received. Just making that effort, just reaching out is part of the healing process, you know? And it'll help you. Make some space around those wounds, you know, and if you don't do your shadow work, that the medicine, you know, because I cringe a little bit when people say like, oh, I received this healing, you know, from the medicine. Yes and no. I mean, I think, you know, healing is a verb, is an active verb. You know, it's like you received medicine and the medicine showed you the work that you need to do, but healing is something you do. Healing is a process that you actively engage with, hopefully, at a certain point in your life before it's too late. And you have to commit to doing the work, the hard work that it's very easy to distract ourselves from with substances. including plant medicines, you know, ayahuasca, visionary plant medicines. You know, it's like I share this from personal experience because I spent several years spiritually bypassing, you know, disrespecting the medicine and just going to ceremony and after ceremony as an experience, you know, because it's a powerful experience and I had the resources to do it. And there's also, you know, a social aspect to joining a medicine community and being part of a community like that felt really good. Yeah. The community that I resonated with. But ultimately, I wasn't really doing the work, you know, that I needed to do. And it took me to not doing that work. Once the medicines have stirred up some trauma, you know, it's really important to do the work because you can get led to dark places because that trauma has been stirred up and you have to cope with it somehow. Yeah. And I turned to other substances like alcohol, you know, to cope with it because I didn't really have the commitment and the intention clear when I first started sitting with the medicine. And in those first few years, it took me a while to really, you know, wake up to the fact that I actually have to do the work, you know, and not disrespect the medicine. That's one of my biggest regrets in life is taking that long because I caused a lot of damage in my family and in my relationships with my wife and bandmates, you know. Yeah. And so that's my cautionary tale for sure. You know, I almost ruined my life by doing this medicine work without actually doing the homework, you know. But thankfully, the medicine planted seeds, you know, and led me to other medicines that then I was able to integrate and finally do the work.
Yeah, it's interesting because in hindsight, it's like, well, I could have done that, but sometimes you might not be ready yet. And you do have to go through those hardship and through that dark path to be ready and
Absolutely.
Help others who are then you can talk about it now and share that experience to guide others.
You're right. I regret the time wasted and the damage done. But you're right. There is like a kind of divine timing to all of it, you know, and it's just like it unfolded the way it had to unfold, you know, and I had to go through, you know, the addiction and all that stuff, you know, and to get to the other side, you know. Yeah. But really it's, you know, eventually opening myself up to the other medicines in my life. Because I believe that, you know, ayahuasca shows us things to work on, but it also leads us to other medicines in our life, you know, that we talked about and other plants, non-psychoactive plants, you know. I learned a lot from Sage's herbalism course and learning from plants like Oregon grape and like just getting into herbalism a little bit. And I'm no expert by any means, but I have developed an important relationship with certain plants, you know, rose as well. And then, you know, the medicine will lead you to, you know, a guy like my friend Eric, you know, who, showed me a Kundalini practice, you know, that is, you know, has now become part of my daily morning practice, you know, that has really helped serve as a container for me to do a lot of that emotional work and processing on my own in my own little morning container, you know. So it's like the medicine will lead you to all these people and practices and plant, other plants and things that you maybe don't open yourself up to right away, but those seeds have been planted and hopefully eventually you integrate all those medicines and you find the set of medicines that works for you in your life, whether they're people or plants or practices or meditation or whatever, you know. But it takes time, you know, and it's, you know, I'm still in the process. I'm still working through that childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And I always will, to some degree.
Yeah,
I always will. And it's a lifelong journey.
The day you think you're done, I think, is the day maybe you need to do more work.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
It's beautiful.
My wife will remind you of that every day. Reminds me of that all the time.
Oh, you think you're done? No.
No, I mean, seriously, my wife was the one who's really like, you know, you're doing all this medicine work, but... you know, you're still struggling and you're still like, we're still fighting. And like, and so she, in some ways, my wife, Angela's been one of my biggest teachers and one of my biggest medicines, you know, and, you know, she's sat herself. She doesn't need to sit as much, you know, cause she's pretty grounded and pretty wise. She's the wise one in the family, for sure.
Yeah, you reminded me of Gabor Maté and his wife, which I was watching his documentary on trauma. And I think she was talking about how he would come home and, you know, they're humans. And they would have stresses, and, you know, and I think we're not perfect either. And I think, at least for me, the medicine work isn't to reach perfection, but, you know, more to find harmony maybe between the imperfection and who I want to be.
Yeah. I like that way of putting it, for sure.
It's and I love, you know, talking about the unfolding of that process too, because I think there's a certain beauty to being able to let it unfold.
Yeah.
And not try to rush it, especially coming from corporate.
Yeah.
You know, there's a certain intensity, and sometimes things have to unfold on their own. And it's like, how do you balance that unfolding with following your path and being patient?
Patience, And that's, you know, just as I was saying that I was regretting kind of how long it took me to kind of wake up to doing the work, like, I also... I realized that a big part of the process is having patience and compassion for yourself and your process. And you can't really heal those wounds until you have compassion for those wounds.
Yeah.
You know, for compassion for that little boy inside of us, you know, or a little child inside of us that's still crying out, you know. Okay. And until you can make space and make peace and really embrace that child within through various practices and therapy, you know, it's another big part of the journey. And it's hard to heal that stuff without compassion for oneself and just loving that wounded child within us, you know, and just rather than, you know, like resenting it or, you know, repressing it or kind of shutting it out, just embracing it and opening yourself up to it and just really feeling that compassion, you know, and
that's beautiful. Thank you. We're almost at time, but you said, this is wonderful. You said something really beautiful. And actually, I also wanted to talk about your transition after corporate, but, you know, we can keep that for the next time we meet. But you said something beautiful before we met, where you were talking about your relationship with your daughter and that little child inside of you. And I'd love to kind of bring that toward the end.
So for sure. So I want to mention a really big part of my healing journey has been recently, especially developing kind of my daily morning practice. I think that's really important, you know, just being your own healer, you know, is really important in not relying on external medicines or other shamans or healers. Yeah. It's just learning to process your own emotional stuff, you know, and setting a container for it. But what made space for that really was the last year last couple of years, I've been doing assisted therapy. You know, I have a therapist who works with certain medicines, psilocybin and MDMA in particular. And I think that kind of one-on-one experience with a trained guide can really help give you access to that inner child and give voice to that inner child and let that child really speak, you know, because that child has been crying and out, has been crying out, and I ignored it for so long, and it manifested in all kinds of destructive patterns. So what really has been critical is I have an angel of a therapist that I'm happy to refer people to, because she's amazing, and she's an amazing guide and working with these medicines. And yeah, that container really helped me go inside, you know, really in a much deeper way than I had in a group ceremony yeah. context, you know, and connect with that wounded child and finally feel that compassion for myself, you know, and for that little boy. And and in my most recent session yesterday, actually, which I'm still kind of in the afterglow from, you know, I had this beautiful vision, again, just kind of hinted at by my therapist. You know, I was describing how I was seeing my daughter Raina just playing, you know, just filled with joy and that youthful spirit, you know, that carefree youthful spirit. And then all of a sudden I saw myself as a little boy. And my therapist said, oh, maybe they can play together. So then I saw Raina and myself as, you know, a toddler, just kind of playing together, just carefree,
yeah,
free. And just enjoying life, playing, you know, it's like, that's my deepest prayer, you know.
Thank you. I feel a lot of time, like, we forget some of our most basic human rights of, you know, and being able to be free and carefree, and when there's so much pain right now. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really beautiful moment, you know, for me, you know, and just Raina has turned out to be a really big medicine in our lives, you know, for me and my wife individually, of course, but also together as a family. You know, she's always like, Mama Dada Raina, Mama Dada Raina. And she's like, she's saying, like, we're a family.
Yeah.
We're in this together. We're a team, you know. Don't forget that. Oftentimes, you know, we don't have a lot of childcare, so it's like we sometimes kind of pass her back and forth, you know, like a football, you know. It's like, okay, you take care of her now, I take care. I'll do the cooking or whatever, you know. It's like she wants us to be together.
Yeah.
You know, she wants us to be together, and that's the medicine, you know, that those children know how important family is.
Yeah.
And children, they're born that way.
Yeah.
And it's just like all the, you know, I don't know, it's just a lot of conditioning through life that leads us to forget how important family is. You know, and just a lot of things get in the way, a lot of programming and conditioning and culture, you know, telling us we have to succeed in certain ways and, like, you know, prioritizing other things, you know. But really, I feel like the medicines are reconnecting us to our family, you know, the family of love, including not just people, but all the medicines around us. And obviously, Mother Nature, you know. And I hope that we heed that message in time as a species, you know. And reconnect with our hearts and reconnect with our nature, you know, inner nature, outer nature,
and our communities too.
Our communities. The love that's all around us, you know, all the time. We just need to open ourselves up to it, you know. And it's a long journey, you know. And it's a, you know, when you start with the medicine, it's a kind of a Pandora's box, you know. It commits you to a lifetime of work. And it's not like, you know, you're not taking like a magic pill. It's like, I'm healed. You know, it's it's just like, it's just the beginning of just a lifelong journey.
It's quite a path.
It's an interesting path.
I'm thinking about your daughter and the gift you're giving her. At least that's how I look at it for our daughter, and all those moments and memories you're creating for her that, you know, when she's presented with challenges in life, she can go back to, and she can find that shelter and that love that you've given her, which a lot of people lack. A lot of people don't have that.
I mean, that's, you know, Gabor Mate is teaching us, you know, and the message that he's trying to get out there, you know. The importance of that attachment, you know, in those first couple of years of life, just having that solid, love from with your parents, you know. And if there's discord, it causes trauma, you know. And very early in life, it causes attachment trauma, which later manifests like it did with me and all kinds of, if it's not addressed, if you don't do the work, it results in a lot of destructive patterns. And so, I really appreciate what Gabor is trying to do to create a more trauma-informed society. You know, I think a lot of us, there's big T trauma, you know, like, you know, war and, you know, sexual violence and accidents, you know, but then there's little T trauma, which is that kind of subtle, almost sometimes easy to miss, easy to ignore, kind of attachment trauma with your family that then prevents you from developing your authenticity and becoming your authentic self. And my therapist just said a phrase yesterday, like, you know, that childhood trauma often leads to trading off becoming for belonging. Because we didn't have that sense of belonging in our childhood. We want to please people like I did, you know, and we just want to belong. Mm-hmm. We want to belong. And we trade that off. We trade becoming our authentic selves and our true selves and following our true calling due to that need for belonging. And so that's the message that Gabor is trying to spread, you know, in all aspects of society that need it, you know, our educational system and political system and medical system and, you know, all kinds of, it's just, that's for me, that's the real healing work that he's a visionary.
Yeah. Watch this movie twice.
The Wisdom of Trauma, I recommend to everyone.
Watched it by myself, and then I was like, honey, you have to watch this with me. And then we watched it together, and there's parts in there where wow, you can really feel what people have gone through, that it's eye-opening.
Yeah, I mean, I think I recommend that movie to everyone. And I shared that movie with my family as well and with my mom. And it really opened up the space to have some really good conversations with her about our family growing up and the tensions that we grew up with and the guilt that she felt for uprooting us and moving us to the States and distancing us from our father.
And so
there's real medicine in that movie,
No, there was, like, it helped us watching it together. Doing your own processing. There's a lot. Good. I want to do one last thing.
Yeah.
I was pulling a card for you for, actually I can pull it for your journey. And this is something my wife taught me that sometimes I'll do before ceremonies to help with a little introspection. And it's pretty amazing what happens with card pulling. I'm always amazed. And
I've had a few amazing pulls and a lot of insight into my life through friends who I don't practice it myself, but I have close friends who are really good at it, and I've learned a lot from them.
I keep it very simple, and so I just knock three times, and then I ask the angels and the powers that be to give me a message for Hernan and where he's at in his journey, and any type of message that could help you in your journey.
Thank you.
And for people who are listening, I start shuffling the cards, and I'm not the best of shufflers, but as I'm shuffling, I do think.
Oh, is that it?
That's it. That's very fast.
Reflection.
I was
that's a good card.
Hernan. And,
yeah.
And so this one is, I'll show it to the camera here if it can actually focus on it. No, not really. It says winter solstice reflection.
Reflection.
What does it show on the picture?
It shows kind of trees and kind of a snowy winter setting. Nice illustration. There's a lake reflection as well of the trees. And
what does that make you think of? I mean, Leavenworth?
It makes me think of Leavenworth. We definitely have a lot of snow there, that's for sure. what does it make me think of? Yeah, so it is actually a super interesting card that you pulled for me, or that you kind of serendipitously dropped. I think it's a perfect card for me because, especially where I'm at right now, I guess I'm a point in my journey where I'm doing a lot of reflection on the whole journey, and that's why I'm here, and and you invited me to do this at just the right time, because it's just, I'm at a point where I've just been past several months in particular, just reflecting on all of this and just kind of like collecting all my thoughts about my life and my story and my journey and how I want to share it with others. And that's why I'm here. And it just reminds me of just the importance of just stopping and reflecting, and stopping and breathing and going inward, and my meditation practice has been really helpful in that way, just giving me that, like I was saying, that just that container, that time to myself to just really go in and just see what comes up, this is a lot of what I've shared today is what's the kind of reflection that's been coming up for me about my life and the journey. And the more you reflect on your life periodically, or even daily, it's the more intentional that you can be about your life going forward, And the winter solstice is that point where, where we go from, from the darkest night, I guess, to the return of the light.
As we're getting closer to the lightest day.
And then we're close to the summer solstice. And so it's a really beautiful card. Thank you for dropping that on the floor.
Oh, you're welcome. I'll read that little passage for you here. Review the past year and ask yourself what the most important lessons you've had to learn are, what you have accomplished, and what dreams and vision you want to manifest in the upcoming year. Whether it has been a relatively smooth ride or a challenging series of events, acknowledge your experience as being the work of Source, no matter what your judgments, fear, or joys are. Honor whatever has happened over the previous several months with gratitude and forgiveness, then let it go. Allow yourself some solitude so you can spend some quiet, slow time in reflection. Once you feel complete, reflect on your present life, especially focusing on what you are grateful for. When you are finished, consider what is to come, all the different possibilities and potential that exist before you. Allow your imagination to roam without limitation or ambition and see what shows up. Notice how you feel in your body with whatever scenario plays out in your mind. These are previews of that which is gestating and can manifest and grow when cared for properly. Patience and stillness is called for here. For just as the earth cycles at their own pace, so does this cycle.
I mean, I feel like we touched on a lot of these themes through. I mean, I think that's what this whole conversation was about, really.
Exactly.
So it was the perfect card.
You know, it's been an experiment with the cards and trusting in them because, you know, you never know.
Like, yeah.
But like, it's kind of magical what comes.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it because, I mean, I think one thing that I, from that passage was, you know, we talked about the importance of integration and doing your work. That's definitely something that I've been tuning into the last year or so. And last couple of years, during COVID, really, I think COVID for me and for a lot of people was an opportunity to look inward, to look inside, you know, and maybe take a break from the medicine, you know, and tune into our internal medicines, you know, and tune into what's coming up for us, you know, where's that anger coming from, you know, and do that work, that shadow work. But I think when you read that, the thing that came up for me was, this idea, this message that I've gotten all along, and I just recently started tuning into, is that the healing happens from the inside out, you know, and, you know, literally from your center out. And so you got to do your work first and then help radiate that healing out to your family first and foremost, you know, close immediate family. Make sure you heal those relationships, you know, and try to create the happiest home that you can, you know, the most nourishing home for your family. And then don't get ahead of yourself. You know, you'll think like, oh, I have to change the world. I have to write this book or I have to like lead ceremonies, you know, like.
You can burn yourself if you.
Yeah. Like, you know, Alex always said, you know, walk a spiritual path with practical feet. You know, it's one step at a time. Don't look way out there, you know. Stay right here, you know, and take that next step, you know, and heal those around you, you know, and your friends, your community, you know, and then maybe go change the world. I don't know. You know, I think that is how you change the world, is we all just kind of do our own work and we take care of those around us. I think a lot of collective healing can happen that way. You know, if everyone's just kind of finding their own medicine, you know, it doesn't have to be ayahuasca. It doesn't have to be mushrooms. It doesn't have to be anything psychoactive, you know, find what could, you know, it could be therapy, whatever connects you with those things that need love inside of you and that need healing and follow that. You know, follow what connects you with your inner self, you know.
Good.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
That's great. Thank you, Hernan.
That's all I know.
Just a few things. That's beautiful, inspiring, and I hope it, you know, it helps others who can listen to this and find help in your journey. Now, where can people find you? I'll put all that in the show notes, but like, what's the easiest way to get in touch with you?
Let's see. I don't know.
Well, your music?
I have some songs on SoundCloud, but you know, they're just kind of rough demos, and I can't wait to this in a few months. I think I'll have the album for Reina finished, and I'll proudly share that with everyone. I don't know. Just connect with me on, the dreaded Facebook thing or whatever. Go. Just reach out to me or
you can just email that later.
And... Yeah. I don't really have like a big website or anything. I'm thinking of sharing my morning practice, and I think I'm gonna record a video because it's been so helpful to me, and I just feel called to share it, and it's this mixture of Kundalini and breath work and meditation, and it works for me. It might resonate with someone else. It might,
Start a series. Because I've got a little morning practice too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, like there's a series of morning practices that help people. And I'd love to share your practice when you're ready to share it.
Yeah. Maybe you can help me make the video.
More
because technology is like, I'm trying to step away from technology as much as possible.
Me too.
It just keeps pulling you back in. That's the problem.
Especially if you do podcasts.
It's addictive.
Unnecessary evil.
Yeah. It's an amazing tool also. And thank you for your use of technology to share these kinds of stories.
Yeah, thank you. You haven't even seen what I'm going to do with your picture that you send me.
Are you going to add all kinds of effects and stuff?
It's very artistic. There's a whole story behind it.
Oh,
I can tell you later.
Oh, okay.
But it takes me about an hour per guest. And
Will it make me look younger? Or
It's going to be beautiful. It's like a painting. Anyway. Good. You already look wonderful. Well, Hernan, thank you for your time today and sharing everything you shared about your journey. It's just deep, beautiful, and humbling. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation again. And the opportunity to share a little bit about my path and my journey. And, so in some ways I don't feel qualified to, it's just my own, I'm speaking from my own personal experience, but if that resonates with even one person, then I'm glad I did it.
Yeah. That's how I look at it too. It's like, if you wait, feeling quantified is another discussion in and of itself.
Yeah.
Like we could go on a tangent.
About quantifying?
About feeling qualified.
Qualified. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like...
Oh, yeah. I kind of said that half jokingly.
Yeah.
It's like the only qualification is just be yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and just speak from the heart, speak from your experience and your journey.
Yeah.
And that's the only qualification that really matters. Mm, you know?
That's so, exactly what you did. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, follow me on Instagram at leadershipadelics, or stop by my website and say hi at fouyad.com. That's FOOYAD. There's a lot going on, and I'd love to hear from you all, the listeners that tune in every week. And if you have suggestions for future guests, don't hesitate to reach out. I'm there, and I'd love to get more guests on the show. Thank you. Have a great day.